Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo here in the Pacific Northwest. The sun is shining. The birds are singing. Woodpeckers are just doing a number on all the trees. It is absolutely gloriously beautiful. We have a fabulous guest to open this week up, and I'm so thrilled to have her with me. Her name is Camilla Chance. She has written a book called Wisdom Man that I think is absolutely awesome. It's about Banjo Clark. He was an Aboriginal elder in Australia. Camilla, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Donna, and it's very, it honors me very much to be with you and with your listeners.
Thank you. I want my audience to know that this is the type of story, the way that you have written it, that really honors a man who went through a journey of his own, and yet it is told with such a sense of understanding about the Aboriginal people, the changes that evolved with the westernization of Australia, and the way that their lives were affected. But for him to give you permission to do this story, I think is a tremendous honor for you. And Banjo Clark died 3 years before the book came out, and we'll be giving the website out later on where people can read more. But Camilla, how in the world did you and Banjo get together? You're a refined lady. You had, you know, you had come from a world that was 180 degrees away from his. Tell us that story, because I think it's a fabulous one.
Yes, well, indeed it was. I was given a very strict upbringing, but it was a very snobbish upbringing. I was very strictly taught that we were better than everybody else. And, of course, that is the biggest lie that any human being can tell another human being. But, yes, I had a very high society upbringing. I was introduced to the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh and curtsied before them on their thrones in the last presentation of Debs. I did the London season, which means 4 days of Ascot races in the Royal Enclosure and balls everywhere. But I did not really have my heart in that society at all. And at the age of 22, I became a Baha'i, which means that I joined a faith that believes that all humankind is one, and all the founders of all the religions that teach love of God and love of your fellow human beings are one and were sent by God to tell people what they needed in their immediate future. And now the job of Baha'is was to prepare people's hearts for a complete change in the world, a complete upside down, and many, many thousand centuries of peace that the world had never known before. So anyhow, I was absolutely delighted to meet people who came from all walks of life and gave each other confidence and inspiration and a love that was just tangible. And I became a Baha'i in Switzerland while living with my grandmother. And when I came back to Australia, there were Aboriginal people in my community. But my husband and I soon moved to Warrnambool, where I saw no Aboriginal people at all, although the population was extremely high of Aboriginal people. They were just superb at disappearing. They had the art of disappearing very, very finely. And a group of Baha'is came to stay at our house, and they were all different nationalities. And one of them was an Aboriginal, a young, full-blood Aboriginal from the north of Australia. called Philip, and he changed his name to Bawu, which means penguin. He was 16 years old, and he expressed, it doesn't mean penguin, it means pelican.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a slip of the tongue. And he expressed the desire to meet the local Aboriginal people. So we all went out to the Aboriginal settlement where most of them lived, and we followed Aboriginal tribal law. And Aboriginal people are extremely adaptive to Western civilization. They keep their integrity. They find an Aboriginal way of doing things, no matter what the situation. So they had adapted the law that when a tribal Aboriginal man visits another tribe, he doesn't go into the group. He sits some distance away from them where he cannot hear them talking, but where they can see him. And they will discuss whether to invite him in. And eventually, normally, the elders of the tribe will send a little boy out to invite him in and then give him every hospitality imaginable. So we knew that in this modern situation, we should not just barge in onto the Aboriginal settlement. We sat outside, and the young 16-year-old Aboriginal man played the guitar and sang, and he was the star. And we all sat around him, very happy, all different nationalities, humming along, and my little 4-year-old daughter sat on my knee. And very soon, a carload of Aboriginal men passed us, and they all hung out of the windows, and we waved them over, but they went on driving, and they had a good look at us. And after that, an Aboriginal woman came out and invited us into all the houses, and she introduced us to everybody in every house. And in the last house was Banjo and his mother and many other people. And my little daughter ran up to him, and he hugged her and said, as if it were a very tight hug, but really he was very gentle. And all these people that we'd met seemed so deeply loving. They just had this essence of love. And Banjo seemed to be the most loving of the lot. And he and I recognized universal love in each other straight away. And that was the link. And so that was the first meeting, and very soon after that, three of the men from the settlement were put into hospital. And this had not happened before, while men could be cured or women could be cured. Unfortunately, it had been a system and a tradition that Aboriginal people were turned away from hospital just with some aspirin when they came complaining of not being well. And when they came again, they invariably, to my knowledge, died there. They came so ill that they died there. So this was a new situation, and things were really changing. And Banjo mentions in his book that all his life, when he had been turned away from places and when he had been walking through a town looking for work and the police had locked him up and let him go in the morning without, he said, even a cup of tea, and just said, keep on walking, we don't want you seeking work in our town. And when people had come out of pubs to jeer at him as he passed, all this time he kept thinking, there's got to be a big change. A big change will happen. It has to. And he thought that policeman will become a kind person when he's older and has learned a bit. And he always thought that about human beings that he met. He always forgave them, and he always expected that they would become better. So anyhow, this big change had happened at the hospital, and here I was visiting these three men with my little daughter and my little son, who was extremely young, and my daughter played her ukulele to them, a toy ukulele, and sang them French lullabies. And my heart was in my mouth because I thought they'll think we're snobs. They'll mm-hmm. know I have taught her these French songs. And if you showed you knew French in Australia before white people, they thought you were feeling that you were better than they were. And it was the biggest relief in the world that these Aboriginal men saw straight into our hearts, and they knew that my daughter was just singing them songs to make them feel well and make them better, and that I certainly didn't feel superior to them. If anything, I was very admiring of their culture. And my daughter said to them, "You're special because you're Aboriginal. You have a beautiful culture." And they thought, "No one's ever called us special before. They've called us every other name, but not special."
Mm-hmm.
And Banjo said all the nurses came around to hear my daughter singing, and they realized that music unites the hearts of people everywhere. They meet on a level very deep, a level deeper than emotion.
That and is so true. Very, very true.
Yes.
Now, I
and
wanted
Banjo
to... Oh, excuse me?
Yes, I'll just finish with a sentence, I think.
Sure.
That he said we were teaching the nurses how to get on with people. He didn't say with Aboriginal people, but to him his people were people. They were the people. And he said the nurses were learning how to get on with people because he said he could see into their hearts. And they were wondering how Aboriginal people could be so important that a respectable lady was visiting them. And their hearts were changed by the scene. And so that was the beginning, and I'll listen to you. I haven't actually told you, in answer to your question, how we came to be writing the book, but it's your turn, please.
Oh, you're delightful. Well, I think that my audience needs to know that you and Banjo met in July of 1975, and he knew that he wanted you. He chose you to record his life story. He didn't want anyone to know what you were doing. So for over 20 years, you documented your conversations because the Aboriginal people are storytellers, naturally. They have always had an oral tradition, and he wanted to honor that, and that's how he had been taught, and that's what he did with you. And it was only after his death, and that was in March of 2000, that you let people know that you had this manuscript, and of course you had to get approval from his children. And one of the things that I thought was so poignant was that it's not in chronological order. You have done some of that, but you've really kept the essence of this man's spirit and what he wanted to share with the world, also recording the way his life was. Now, Banjo went through a lot of learning curves, which all of us do if we live long enough. And he was known for what you have just expressed, the love, the caring. And he established a location where anybody could come in, and there was a harmonic in that environment. And that's really the legacy that he wanted to leave, wasn't it? That people need to know we have to have the harmonic so that we work with the earth, with each other, and establish a harmonic so that our generations that are yet to be born can enjoy this environment we're in. Am I correct?
Yes, he had a vision just before he passed on of a building on his land where people from all walks of life and all races could come to learn the best of Aboriginal ways, which of course are caring for the land and sharing and feeling that their ancestors are all around them. The spiritual realm is so close that there's virtually no difference between material life and having passed on. And I made an arrangement with Penguin, the publishers, that probably that's why I made the verbal slip earlier, but yes, it's published by Penguin. And I made the arrangement that profits from the book would be divided among Banjo's children
mm-hmm.
and me, but my share would all go into this building on Banjo's tribal land. And the building has actually been built now. There are many needs that it still has. It has electricity and many things, so that already they are putting it to the use that Banjo wanted. But it has ongoing needs, and so all profits still go to it. And it would be great to beautify the grounds around it, which are just grass at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Now,
So I don't make anything from the book.
Well, that's wonderful what you're doing, and I think that's a great project to work on. With Banjo, in the journey that he went through in growing up, when you were listening to his tales of the way the Aboriginal people were treated, he had started going to school. He was in school 2 days, and he was out because he saw a teacher strike a student. He said, "That's it, I'm out of here." Their spirit and their closeness to the land, with all of the intermarriage that has occurred, there still is a patterning where the Aboriginals will just leave, won't they? They'll just go and do a walkabout.
Yes. Yes, walkabout is a tradition that nobody can ever prevent. It's very natural. It's probably so natural that probably the rest of us should do it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned to somebody who talked about Yvonne Goolagong to me. I don't know if you remember her or if she was before your time, but she was a famous Aboriginal tennis player and reached the top of the tree. She played at Wimbledon many times and always won. And she changed her name to Yvonne Corley when she married, because that was her new surname, but people mm-hmm. remember her as Yvonne Goolagong. She's still living, by the way. And she, I watched her, and she was well known for going walkabout in the middle of a match.
Oh, my.
She, it was just in her head, but when she was obviously winning, she would then go into a bit of a trance and think about other things and go walk about in her head totally. And she had just come back when there was a bit of a challenge there again, and she would hit the winning shot then. But she would give her opponent a chance to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
So walk about is a very, very fundamental thing.
Now, one of the fascinating aspects about him is that he was so open with you. When you were writing about his early years, when you heard the stories about the way the Westerners treated the Aboriginal people, how did that affect you? I know I have been made aware of different things, and I just felt it so deeply, and I thought it's so much like what happened to the American Indian here in the United States, and it happens in different places in the world, and it's so sad because so much of their culture and their environment has been just destroyed. How did this affect you? I mean, you were with him and interacting with him for almost 30 years.
Well, of course, there are many tears. There were and there are many tears, and I'm actually weeping as you speak with me. But you are so right that it did happen to the American Indians. It happened further, a lot of it happened further back. A lot of it is not further back, as you and I well know. But they were taken away to residential schools, the young children, and many died simply because they were so lonely and they were forbidden to speak their language. Those who were there in groups used to meet and secretly go through their rituals together. They used to meet at night. But I am not here to talk about your people.
No, I just made the comparison. It was similar. you know, the same.
It must have been so terrifying, these blue-eyed people on horses taking children away.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yes, it happened in much more recent history in Australia, and children were taken away on a huge scale, and this was mainly kept secret from the general run of Australians, white Australians, that it was systematically done.
Mm-hmm.
Deliberately to destroy the culture was kept secret. They knew that some people were put in orphanages, but they had no idea that it was deliberate. And the children were given new names. Often doctors wrote new birth certificates, and children were told their parents had died, that their parents didn't want them, and they were not told they were Aboriginal. And the idea was that they would grow up and marry non-Aboriginals and the race would die out. So after the massacres, this happened, and children who were taken away a little older were forbidden to speak their language. The old people were forbidden to pass on their culture or their language. Banjo was a huge exception because on the settlement, the people were mainly neglected. They starved, but they were neglected. They starved, of course, because their hunting grounds had been taken away and
mm-hmm.
and such. But the old people on Banjo's settlement chose him. They chose him to pass on the knowledge when he was a little boy, and he was always with the old people. This is extremely rare. I have read so many Aboriginal autobiographies where the author says, or the person telling someone else the story says, my old people didn't trust me, they wouldn't tell me anything. But in Banjo's case, it was exactly the opposite, and he wondered why the old people chose him. And he realized in his later years that he had outlived all his friends, and that must have been why the old people chose him. They knew. And he felt that the world so desperately needed to know Aboriginal ways and Indigenous ways generally that he had to give his story to the world and his account of Aboriginal beliefs and principles to the world, that it desperately needed them now. And about the children being taken away, in 2008, on the 12th of February, our Prime Minister issued an apology to all those who had been taken away and all those parents still living who had suffered so desperately from their children being stolen from them. And there had been immense suffering among all the Aboriginal people I knew before that time. They had said, how can we heal if nobody knows we have or believes that we have anything to heal from? And that apology made the hugest difference. And immediately Aboriginal people said, we can either accept or reject an apology, but we have to react. And they gave dinners all over Australia to which they invited a lot of white people. And they made speeches accepting the apology. And I was invited by an Aboriginal family in the north of Australia, and I was living in the south, and sat at their table. And the Governor General of Australia chose to sit at the same table. She had been put at an official table, but she chose to sit at our table. So I gave her a copy of Wisdom Man. But there was this total, enormous acceptance of the apology and the desire to start their lives again and pick up the pieces and shut the door to a huge extent on the agony of the past. And Aboriginal people can do that because traditionally they never bear grudges. They live in the eternal present.
Mm-hmm.
And so they do not bear grudges. Yeah.
I loved the story that he shared with you about how the children were taught to work in nature, how they learned how to track the kangaroos, and they would know how to catch a kangaroo for a meal, and they always had the belief that they had to give the animal a quick, merciful death because they wanted to honor the animal and not cause any unnecessary suffering, because they felt that the animals were given to them so that they could be nourished. And their philosophy, fishing, they were only allowed, they were told just to take what they needed. They didn't overfish. And they had what they called a feed, F-E-E-D. And that was, anybody and everybody was invited to a feed. If you were at somebody's place and they put on a feed, whatever you had that was on the table, it reminds me of the way my grandmother was in Virginia. You know, it's like, okay, come on over. We're having beans and cornbread, or we're going to have steak and eggs or something, but whatever we have, you're welcome to come and share it with us. It was that kind of a hospitality, and it was something that was expected. And he did that on his tribal land that he worked so hard to be able to keep, because he said he was a custodian. Now, that's my word, but he was that caretaker, and that land belonged to the Aboriginal. It did not belong to anybody else, and it needed to be taken care of.
Yes, that's the way he saw it, and certainly his house was open house for all the needy, and people said, why are you looking after these down-and-out people who are not behaving well? And he said, my house is a house for lost souls. If they're not behaving well, they're lost, and they can cook themselves a feed. I'll cook them a feed. I'll look after them. Because they have lost themselves, and he felt that Aboriginal people who were close to the land were not lost, that they knew themselves, they knew who they were. And he did say that there are no bad people in the world, only unhappy people, and that's why he forgave everybody. When they were little children, certainly they used to go looking for swan's eggs in the season. And I don't know if everybody knows, but normally a bird will raise perhaps 4 strong children. But when their babies are born, usually one of them gets pushed out of the nest. The first hatchlings feel stronger, and one of them will die and not receive the food from the mother, or both the parents. And the little children, when they went looking for swan's eggs, they very carefully would remove one egg from each nest and be extremely careful that they left no human scent to put off the mother. And that way, the mother could raise 4 strong babies from the start, and no little bird got pushed out of any nest. And that way, that's just one example of the ways that they helped nature, that they moved in harmony with nature, and nature cared for them.
Yes, and Wisdom Man is phenomenal. I want to share a little bit of a poem here called Wisdom Man by Andy Alberts. Let me tell you all a story about a wise old man. His name is Uncle Banjo, always doing the best he can. Now, you may see him walking through the streets of your town. He's a man that's always smiling. He never wears a frown. At nighttime, we'd go walking through the forest on our land. You'd laugh and tell me stories about our tribal clan. Our midnight firing embers show your smiling eyes. The next thing you know, the night is gone, and the dawning breaks the skies. Oh, stand up, words of wisdom, man. Don't let them push you round. You know they think they can. Please be strong, old wisdom man. I've seen him in the papers talking of his land. They write his story, take his picture, but they don't understand all the hurt, pain, and anger that he feels inside because of the raping of his mother earth. His pride has been denied. Oh, stand up, words of wisdom man. Don't let them push you round. You know they think they can. Please be strong, old wisdom man. You see all troubles and hard times in this world today. That's why he teaches us young fellows that we may know his ways. Like the old fellows before us, said Uncle, they all come and gone. They all made that sweet, sweet journey to the dream time and beyond. So you see all you young Corries, when living through your lives, remember, Uncle Banjo told us always to be wise. Beautiful poem. You have poems that express so much throughout your book. What is the website that people can go to find out more about this book? It has won awards. What is the website? Is it www.wisdommanbook.com?
Yes, that's correct, Donna, yes. Yes, there are four videos on the website, and there are many quotations from Banjo, some quotations from the book that can be downloaded, and also there are facilities for ordering from Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com, but it can be ordered through any bookstore as well. So it's Wisdom Man by Banjo Clark, as told to Camilla Chance, and in booksellers' manuals it just says Wisdom Man by Camilla Chance, I believe, published by Penguin. These days it's published by Penguin US, and the website is www.wisdommanbook.com. And if I may, I was touched by your speaking of your grandparents. It was your grandparents, wasn't it?
Yes.
Who invited you to meals. And certainly Banjo, when he was in hospital, he was visited by some people from El Salvador, and they had no word in common, no language in common. And Banjo tried to share his hospital food with them. And, of course, they followed convention and didn't want to eat a patient's food. And eventually he persuaded them to. So they all sat around him and had a meal with him in hospital from the food that the hospital had given Banjo. And they began talking and laughing. And he said they really felt at home, and they would have remembered how there was all this sharing in their homes, and they would have felt as if they were back home and they were exiled from their country. So he felt that, again, this kind of unity of sharing material things expressed the fundamental unity of all humankind, and that it was a symbol of that, and that it had a wonderful effect on people.
Well, I
agree. And, of
course,
there's this unity with the spiritual realm as well, with people who have passed on. And that causes Aboriginal people to move with absolute confidence through the desert, knowing that they're going to find water because they will be protected by all their ancestors and all the spiritual realm around them.
Camilla,
sorry for interrupting.
Oh, my goodness. No, that's all right there. I know that we are out of time here, and I want to thank you so very much. It's been so gracious of you to be on the air with me. Your book is phenomenal. I think every school child should read it because it gives them an insight into another world, another life that has so much wisdom in it and so much good to share. It's just wonderful to have you as a guest. I'm so glad that you were able to write this story. For those of you listening, WisdomManBook.com. There are four videos on the site. There's so much more information. This is a powerful book. It's a legacy that a man has left to those that want to learn more and to share it. Camilla Chance, thank you for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for a moment. We'll be back in a moment. Don't forget, WisdomManBook.com, a real story about an Aboriginal elder. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in Physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
The Northwest Women's Show, presented by Assurant Health, is a show that's all about you, your body, your spirit, your life. 400 exhibits, free samples, and best of all, shopping with fabulous Women's Show specials. Meet Amy Roloff from Little People Big World and cosmetic cop Paula Begon. Bring your questions to Hollywood celebrity stylist and creator of Wynn Hair Care Products, Chaz Dean. Make it a point to attend our free seminars and be inspired by topics that can change your life, like channeling your inner strength, weight loss strategies, and women's self-defense. Plus fun and trendy fashion shows from JCPenney. And backed by popular demand, Seattle's hottest firefighters. Favorite authors Ann Rule and J.A. Jantz. The Women's Show, presented by Assurant Health. March 5th through 7th at Quest Field Event Center. Sponsored by Bartell Drugs, American Family Insurance, Puget Sound Energy, Snoqualmie Casino, The Seattle Times, and King 5. For show information, go to nwwomenshow.com. The Northwest Women's Show. It's such a girl thing.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. If you would like to give me a buzz, I'd be happy to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 888-815-9756 is our toll-free worldwide number. Now, I wanted to make a comment about Camilla, and when you have someone like a banjo who is an elder of a group of people who is passing on a legacy and was honored and respected by other Aboriginals, and the mantle of telling the story was passed on to him, and then for that to go on to someone else. But, you know, when after we had started on the break, Camilla, and we were talking with her from Australia, she said that there is a school on Long Island in New York, William Cullen Bryant, that this book had been brought to them, brought to their attention, and they, through Skype, were able to see her. She had a video camera on her computer. They were able to set everything up, and they were able to see her and actually interact with her. And she said, apparently in the school they had this huge screen, and she said, I must have been just huge in that classroom. But she said she could see the children and the young ones, and I think she said that there was a 12th grade class that was there as well. And she said it was just the most wonderful experience. We live in such a marvelous time. When you think of people like Banjo, who had lived in an era where when he was starting out, they didn't have phones. They didn't do anything like that. And here we are today able to see people around the world on a system like Skype, even have it on YouTube. I mean, there's all of these things that are available to us. It really is amazing. And just think, our kids are growing up in this environment, and they don't blink their eyes over it. It's just like, eh, it's what comes. That's what happens with every generation as we move forward. So I just wanted to share that with you. She is a lovely woman. The book is a powerful book, Wisdom Man. So I encourage you, if you like history, if you like knowing about what's gone on with the people, with a culture, I think this makes a fabulous read because it's written with his spirit and in his essence. So again, Wisdom Man by Camilla Chance. Just a wonderful, wonderful book. Okay, I had somebody send me some information. I just had to chuckle, so I thought I'd share this chuckle with you. It was sent by Bill. He said, at a recent computer expo, Bill Gates reportedly, compared the computer industry with the auto industry and stated if GM had kept up with technology, like the computer industry has, we'd all be driving $25 cars that got 1,000 miles to the gallon. Well, apparently General Motors responded to this comment because they heard about it rather quickly, I'm sure. Said if GM had developed technology like Microsoft, we'd all be driving cars with the following characteristics. For what? One, for no reason whatsoever, your car would crash twice a day. And two, every time they repainted the lines in the road, you'd have to buy a new car. Three, occasionally your car would die on the freeway for no reason. You'd have to pull to the side of the road, close all the windows, shut off the car, restart it, and reopen the windows. Then only then could you continue. For some reason, you would just simply accept this. Four, occasionally executing a maneuver such as a left turn would cause your car to shut down and refuse to restart, in which case you'd have to reinstall the engine. Five, Macintosh would make a car that was powered by the sun, was reliable, five times as fast, and twice as easy to drive, but would run on only 5% of the road. Six, the oil, water, temperature, and alternator warning lights would all be replaced by a single, this car has performed an illegal operation warning light. The seven, the airbag system would ask, are you sure, before deploying. Eight, occasionally, for no reason whatsoever, your car would lock you out and refuse to let you in until you simultaneously lifted the door handle, turned the key, and grabbed a hold of the radio antenna. Nine, every time a new car was introduced, car buyers would have to learn how to drive all over again because none of the controls would operate in the same manner as the old car. Ten, you'd have to press the start button to turn the engine off. P.S., I'd like to add that when all this fails, you call customer service in some foreign country and be instructed in some foreign language how to fix the car yourself. I just couldn't pass that up. Oh, my goodness, frustrations with computers. Haven't we all experienced them at one time or another? Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. By the way, if you have a paranormal story, I'm getting emails from people about their personal experiences, whether it's been near death, if it has been with a special dream that was precognitive, I don't care what the experience is. I'd love to hear your story because I am putting together a book. We're wanting to collect 100 stories, and I want you to tell it in your own words, and I also will need your contact information if you'd like to have your story considered for the book. So please do that. And to me, there's no such thing as a silly experience. If it's affected you and had an impact on your life, that's what really counts. And this book is all about letting other people know that they are not alone in this experience of life and what we consider paranormal. When we come to understand it, then we're no longer afraid. And that's what I would like to think, that the publishing of this book, The Stories, and I'll have a bunch of mine in there, but also I'd like to have yours. So send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com, and be sure when you send it, put in the subject line, The Donna Sebo Show, because that way it differentiates. I've got like 200 some odd emails that I've got to go through yet, and that helps to differentiate the email, and you can put in it story for your book or just The Donna Sebo Show, however you want to do it, and that way I know that it is from you. So again, send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Also, you could send the story snail mail if you wanted to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. And then the Northwest Women's Show is coming up. Oh, this is such an awesome, awesome event. And I have been involved with them for years now, and it's just a joy to be a part of this. And what I would like to do is invite you to come on out. If you're in the Pacific Northwest, tell your friends about March 5th, 6th, and 7th. You've heard the ad on the show, but I really mean it. This is an event that is fun. Now, on Friday the 5th, I'm going to be doing a three-hour forum with six powerful women speakers. The first hour, we're going to be talking about money and security on the Internet, how to keep yourself from being put in a fraudulent situation, identity theft situation, as well as learning how to work with money if you're in business. And then the second hour is going to be about energy healing. Two women that are really very knowledgeable about this. This is their life's passion. They're very dedicated to teaching others. And then the third hour is going to be about animals. This is really something I'm looking forward to. My booth number is 407. I will be in my booth before and after the forum doing many consultations for people. I'm going to have a whole bunch of books there as well. So I invite you to come on out. Stop by. Say hello. I've got some wonderful people helping out and volunteering at the booth, and it's just a delight to do this event. And then on Saturday and Sunday, I'll be speaking at 11:30. I'm going to be talking about your psychic, your inner psychic mirror. So that's a heads up on that. Of course, my newsletter is going to be coming out on the 1st of March. You'll get all of the information in the newsletter. It's also posted on my website, DelphiInternational.com. If you'd like to talk with me today, let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, just give me a call at 888-815-9756. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, those phone lines are open. Oh, don't forget, tomorrow, the healing power of chocolate. Yum! Real good topic to talk about. Just great. And it's not going to be spending 5 seconds on your lips, and you won't gain 13 inches around your hips either. This is good stuff. We're going to be talking in just a little bit. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95, plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Again, don't forget, tomorrow it's chocolate. Cal Ori is going to be my guest. And on Wednesday, I'm going to have an open mic hour. I've got a lot of different things. And every once in a while, I just like to have an hour where I'm able to share with you. And, of course, that entire hour on Wednesday will be open. If you want to call in, you'll be able to do that. And then one of my favorite people, Teresa Tapp. Yes, Teresa's coming back. And we're going to have her on the air with us on Thursday. She has been busier than a one-armed paper hanger. I swear by her fitness program because it really, really works. If you want to be fit and fabulous in 15 minutes a day, you can do it. I'm telling you, I was doing it today. My schedule is so busy, but I got that 15 minutes in. It really makes a difference. Then on Friday, we're going to be talking about atoms, Einstein, and the universe. Real science for real people. Robert Piccioni is going to be my guest. And we have just got a wonderful week here. Tell your friends. And don't forget, if you miss a show, you can always go into our archives here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1. Just go into the Donna Sebo Show, and they'll give you all the instructions on how to get to the archives, and you can listen to them. Okay, I wanted to say that one of my guests that I'd had, Susan Silverstein, said, Donna, you need to know about some information that has come out regarding radiation. Now, this is regarding CT scans. And what they are finding is that a lot of what we're doing, it's like we're using too much. We're using too much dosage. Now, USA Today, a few weeks ago, reported on 2 research studies published in the December 15th issue of the Archives of Internal Medicine revealing that CT scans deliver far more radiation than previously believed. In fact, that CT scans may actually be responsible for nearly 30,000 cancers each year and 14,500 deaths. Now, one of these studies, led by researchers from the National Cancer Institute, estimated the number of cancers that might be caused by the scans. The other study found that patients undergoing the scans may have been exposed for up to 4 times more radiation than previously estimated. Researchers studying over 1,000 patients at 4 San Francisco area hospitals concluded that one CT scan could expose a patient to as much radiation as 74 mammograms, 74 mammograms, or 442 chest x-rays. That's just appalling. Now, this is something we have to really be aware of. Young people are at the highest risk from excess radiation, partly because they're very young and radiation exposure can damage cellular DNA. For example, among 20-year-old women undergoing one coronary angiogram, the CT scan of the heart, one in 150 will develop cancer specifically related to the procedure. Now, a lot of doctors are arguing about this, especially radiologists. However, Dr. Rita Redberg of the University of California at San Francisco wrote up this. Up to one-third of all CT scans are unnecessary. Dr. Rosaline Parsons of Fox Chase Cancer Center in Philadelphia suggests that patients ask their doctors about alternatives that don't involve radiation exposure. And Susan has a cancer treatment facility in New York, and she said, we absolutely agree with these findings. Something else that has been coming out, and that is that should they choose to put body scans in the airport, the amount of radiation that is going to be pummeling people as they are standing around the equipment and as they're going through the equipment is very intense. We have now got research today regarding cell phones. I'm going to have a guest on next month regarding radiation from cell phones. So all of these things come into play, and we can sit here and panic and go, oh, my goodness, I'm going to give this up, that up, the other up. But why not ask what is going to be done? How can we make it so that it is safer? We always are going to have a learning curve. And lots of times people, because of maybe a financial position, don't want to see something shifted or changed. But when the treatment is causing more damage, when you die actually from a treatment or are affected by it so that your body cannot recuperate, I think something needs to really be looked at and evaluated and asked. So that's going to require ingenuity. That's going to require someone thinking outside of the box. That's going to require someone saying, how can we do this better? I'll never forget watching a physician on a television show. It was called Beyond 2000, and this was a doctor in Sweden. I actually tried to find the man, and it was a few years after the program, and nobody knew anything. Things changed so quickly, and I'm sure he passed on. But he had developed a way of treating breast cancer, certain types of breast cancer, where there was no evasion. He said, you don't have to mutilate, you don't have to do anything, and he used a certain kind. He had been a radiologist, and he said, I have seen so much horrific damage done by radiation, but he found a method that was so specific that his patients healed, and he developed this process, and he was interviewed, and as long as I live, I'll never forget him being asked by this reporter, this is wonderful information. How soon can we have this available? And this man, who at the time, I believe, was close to 70, he said, you have to understand something about medicine. It's about 50 years before. He said, I'll be dead and gone before this comes out. It is that just that way in medicine and science, because it's very difficult for people to change their paradigms. And there's a lot of things that will go into it, and they just don't want to change. You see, as consumers, we really need to be aware. I've got some wonderful guests coming up next month where we're going to be talking about ways you can keep yourself well. And this is important. You need to be aware that you're in charge of who you are. You are in charge of this chassis that you have called a body. And if you take care of it, it's going to take care of you. So we just have some wonderful, wonderful people that are going to be sharing their insights. And it's coming from the medical community. These aren't people that you would consider flakes from La La Land. These are people that have been educated very, very thoroughly and are saying it's time for change. We see it. Many of them are younger physicians. And I'm not saying we need to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but we need to understand more. And it takes a lot to make a good physician. It's not just education. It's observation. It's interaction with people. A good physician is a very, very special person. And it's something as consumers we need to really pay attention to ourselves and be wise so that we can be well. Well, I know that we are just about out of time here, and I want to thank you for being with me today. Don't forget, tomorrow we're going to be talking about chocolate, one of my favorite food groups. And Cal Orie is going to be my guest. This woman does research on things that's just absolutely marvelous, and the chocolate research she has done is fabulous. So we might be sharing a couple of recipes with you, but we're going to give you all kinds of insights in this wonderful book on chocolate. So be sure and join us. Tell your friends. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Let your light shine. We really need what you have to offer. There's no one else like you on the planet, and that makes you very special. Thank you for being with me today. We'll talk with you tomorrow, right here, same time, same place. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.